The Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast, joining you on a Monday when the Brewers have just been struggling a little bit. Lost 3 of 4 over the weekend to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Kind of a heartbreaking defeat on Sunday. We had some Easter Sunday magic, which, of course, Brewers fans always think back to the 1987 season when they're playing at home on Easter, when Rob Deere and Dale Swaim hit some memorable home runs to extend their winning streak to 12 games to open the year. This year's Brewers were able to hit a home run in the bottom of the eighth to tie the game, but Cody Bellinger's home run in the top of the ninth proved to be the difference. Brewers take a 6-5 loss on Sunday, and they're down in the dumps a little bit. They're still 13-10, but having struggled in this series, now hitting the road to go to St. Louis and New York to face the Mets. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. I'm going to be joined here shortly by Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Brewers. We're going to break down all of the discussion topics at this point. A lot of starting pitching chatter. Corbin Burns was sent down over the weekend to AAA. He's trying to get some things right, figure out his fastball command a little bit. So they've got a couple openings in the rotation with Freddy Peralta also injured and struggling. Chase Anderson more than admirably filled in on Saturday with 5 one-hit innings. Great stuff from Chase Anderson. He'll be back again. Adrian Hauser is coming up to pitch against the Cardinals on Monday. So the Brewers are juggling things a little bit and trying to gut through this very tough April schedule. A reminder that you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts especially. Leave us a rating and review. Please do it right now. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. We love to bring this to you. Every rating, every review we get enables us to reach more and more people. It's how the algorithms work. And while you're there, you might as well check out our Milwaukee Bucks podcast with Matt Velasquez and myself. We do that every week as the Bucks, of course, now in the NBA playoffs, top seed in the Eastern Conference. Very cool to chat about them as often as we can. They are one of the best teams out there, so you'll want to catch up on that. You can find our Badgers podcast and Packers podcast as well. So I'll give those a shout out at Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. After I talk to Tom Haudricourt, I have a conversation with Aaron Wilkerson. You know, it's funny, as we sit here on Monday, not entirely sure if Aaron Wilkerson is going to be on the team by later today with the Brewers calling up Adrian Hauser. There has to be a corresponding roster move. A couple options there. Donnie Hart, who was called up over the weekend, might be the guy to go back down to San Antonio. But Aaron Wilkerson could be as well. Hard to tell as we sit here. By the time you're listening to this, it will almost certainly be determined. But as of right now, it is not. But I did want to run the interview with Aaron Wilkerson because I enjoyed chatting with him. He's an interesting backstory. He, of course, hit a home run last week in a loss to the Cardinals. That was on Wednesday. So easy to talk about that when you're talking about a pitcher hitting a home run. More than that, though, he's a guy who came from indie ball, spent several years in independent league baseball, and talked about the culture of indie ball versus what happened when he was in the minors. He's had a lot of success in the minors with the Red Sox organization, was traded over to Milwaukee, and has continued to be pretty strong. And, you know, no one is thinking about him when they think about the starting rotation options for the Milwaukee Brewers, but he is a guy who can fill in if called upon, and has been in the bullpen as well. So he's a really just an interesting story. He's got he has Tommy John surgery in his background that he got while he was in college, and he sort of knocked him from getting a chance to be drafted because he was injured coming out of college. So talked about that stuff and enjoyed meeting with him. But first of all, let's bring in our guy, Tom Haudricourt. Here he is, Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel beat reporter. Cover the Milwaukee Brewers. Read everything he has to say at jsonline.com. So Tom, we'll start right off the top here. We're going to talk about the starting pitching. We're going to talk about Christian Yelich, of course, and the offense in general. But this Brewers team, probably given the fact that they lost 3 of 4 to the Dodgers and 4 of 5 overall, that they do have some problems with their starting pitching. They've had some you know, question marks in the bullpen too, and the offense isn't clicking on all cylinders. The fact that they go to St. Louis at 13-10 overall, I guess we probably should feel pretty good about that, huh?
Well, they when you consider three factors in particular, 13-10 doesn't sound so bad. And those three factors are what you just mentioned, a very difficult schedule. A lot of games against the Cardinals and Dodgers. And then also their starting rotation, you know, one pitcher got hurt, Freddy Peralta, and another has been removed from the rotation and sent down, Corbin Burns. So they've had that to deal with. And then the middle of their lineup is really struggling, especially from a power standpoint. Jesus Aguilar with no home runs and Travis Shaw with just one. So if I would have told you, you know, at the start of April, those three things were going to have to be dealt with I don't know if you would say they'd have a winning record. So they probably feel very fortunate to be above 500. But having said that, they lost two really tough games over the weekend, Friday night and Sunday, to the Dodgers. Games that were fought down to the end and that the Dodgers won with home runs at the end. And so and now the Brewers are done with the Dodgers, you know, for the year, unless they see them again in the postseason. So they've got those seven games out of the way. They, as you said, they continue to play the Cardinals. By Wednesday evening, they will have played them 10 times already, which is kind of silly. But so they're just, you know, trying to plug through the schedule and these issues that they're dealing with.
Yeah, we're going to break down some of those issues that you mentioned one by one, and we'll start with Corbin Burnes, who, as you mentioned, was demoted to AAA on Friday after a series of tough outings, four straight outings where he gave up at least two home runs, gave up three in each of the first three, and then had something like 11 home runs allowed in 17 and two-thirds innings, which is obviously crazy, by far the most in the National League. When camp broke, I really kind of felt the best about Corbin Burnes. I thought he probably was going to have the best breakout potential. And now all three of those young starters in the rotation, Brandon Woodruff and Freddie Peralta, along with Burnes, have struggled. But I see what Burnes' stuff looks like. You know, he strikes out 12 in his first start, famously, while also allowing three home runs. And I just think of him as the guy who could really bust out and be a star. And it just has not materialized. Does this April, does it give you pause to think that maybe Corbin Burnes wasn't ready for this in the first place? Is this just a bump in the road? I mean, how do you look at Corbin Burnes' situation right now?
We'll find out all of that stuff going forward, for sure. You know, for whatever reason, he just kept making mistakes with his fastball. Almost all the home runs he gave up, and home runs are what, you know, were his major problem. Almost all of them on fastballs, and, you know, just not good location on those fastballs. So it's going to be interesting. You know, he didn't pitch a whole lot in the minors. He roared basically in 2 years. He went from draft to big leagues. They put him in the bullpen last year out of need, and he pitched great there. But you're pitching in way shorter bursts there. And as Craig Counsell said, when you come out of the bullpen, we pick the hitters. When you list somebody as a starting pitcher, the other team picks the hitters. So he was facing way more left-handed bats with power than he had faced pitching out of the bullpen last year. So we'll see. I mean, he still has a dynamic arm. I think he has the right makeup. This was probably the best thing to do because they had three choices with Corbin Burnes with what was going on. Stick with him, and then if he continues to struggle, you know, have him go deeper into the muck and possibly lose more confidence. Put him in the bullpen where you can't be sure of what his usage would be, and therefore, you know, how would he work on the problems that he needs to work on when you're not sure when you're going to be able to use him. Or send him down where he can pitch under less pressure, get regular starts, work on his stuff. And that's the one they chose, and I think it was probably the best thing to do. Was it tough for him to have to go down so soon? Yeah, sure it is. No one likes to go down. But this is probably the best thing for him. They needed to just press the reset button, exhale a little bit, and take some pressure off. And I believe he's going to pitch tonight, Monday night, for San Antonio. So he's going to get right back in it. And I suspect we'll see Corbin Burnes again before too long.
Yeah, you said it. His fastball was the big thing. Most of his home runs were poorly located fastballs. Are you surprised he didn't use more of his repertoire? I mean, that's the whole thing with him and why he's a starter and not a long-term reliever. He's got 4 to 5 pitches that he has confidence in. I don't know if we really saw that. I mean, he threw those other pitches, but we saw him rely on that fastball so much, and then it was frequently in the wrong spot and got pounded. Do you feel like he just didn't have confidence in those other pitches, or the staff didn't have confidence and weren't calling for it? What do you think the issue was with the pitch selection?
Yeah, hard to say. I mean, you know, the catcher's calling the pitches, but the pitcher has the ball. He can always shake him off and go with something else. He definitely, his fastball usage was up percentage-wise from last year, and his slider was down, usage was down. So, yeah, I'm sure they asked themselves all those same questions, you know. I mean, but the foundation for every pitcher, almost every pitcher, is fastball command. And when you have that – everything else comes off of that. And he just didn't have fastball command. And, you know, you can throw a large number of fastballs if you're putting them in the right spot. You know, the interesting thing about baseball to me and the home run proliferation that we've seen in the majors in the last few years, if you go back and look at all the videos of all these home runs, they're almost all bad pitches. You know, everybody thinks that these hitters are like hitting these really tough pitches and just, you know, really tormenting pitchers by hitting their good stuff out. Almost all home runs are mistake pitches. You know, they're pitches over the middle of the plate. So, if he would be hitting his spots with his fastball, he could keep using it. So it's just all stuff they've got to figure out. He does have a pretty good repertoire of pitches. He boiled them down to basically fastball slider last year because that's all you need coming out of the bullpen in short bursts. But he's going to have to do more than that as a starting pitcher. And he has the capability to do it.
As we mentioned, Brandon Woodruff and Freddie Peralta have had their struggles as well. Woodruff was roughed up a little bit on Sunday. Peralta on the injured list, probably a short stay, and he'll be back soon. But in addition to being hurt, he'd been ineffective. This team was very high on these three guys coming into the season. I remember Craig Counsell even saying that's the reason to be excited about this team, is that these three pitchers are maybe even ahead of where they thought they would be at this point. And kind of, I don't know, famously, but they definitely eschewed the idea of going after a guy like Dallas Keuchel, getting another veteran in here, bringing in more options, putting a lot of faith that these three guys could do it. And they have plan B. You know, Chase Anderson looked like a great plan B on Saturday night, but they don't have obvious next step options. Is it too early to say that maybe the Brewers miscalculated a little bit? We knew they'd take some lumps, so this is as good a time as any to take them. Did they maybe overestimate what they had, or are we just not? We just can't make that assessment yet.
Yeah, I think it's too soon to say that. Have those guys had issues? Yes, they have. And but that's not uncommon for young pitchers to have to battle their way through in the big leagues. These guys are all, you know, getting their careers going, especially as starting pitchers. And so we'll see, you know. But I mean, this is a team that put a lot of their payroll into their lineup, including $28 million in Moustakas and Grandal. And so they need some of their young pitchers who are under control and not making a ton of money to do well. You know, they can't do high payroll in both lineup and rotation. And so we'll see. You know, they had some other options over the winter that they decided to go with these guys because they're looking at both now and going forward. You know, the future of their organization and the future success of their organization is always going to depend on developing their own pitchers and getting something out of them, because they can't afford to go out on the market and spend over $100 million on a starting pitcher. It just doesn't fit their budget.
Brewers will start Adrian Hauser on Monday against St. Louis. He's been flat dominant for the San Antonio Mission so far this year. He's a guy that you probably remember came over in that same trade that brought Josh Hader to Milwaukee, as well as Brett Phillips and Domingo Santana, the trade in 2015 for Carlos Gomez and Mike Fiers. So a chance that trade could work out if Adrian Hauser develops into a starter. And as we said, Chase Anderson looking good on Saturday. He's earned himself another start in New York later in the week. So you're talking about the lineup a little bit, and we have seen some greatness from the lineup. We'll talk about Christian Yelich in a moment. We've also seen some struggles. Mike Moustakas is now, who's been one of the better hitters, has a fracture in his finger. We don't know how long he'll be out, but the club hopes he only misses a few games. Travis Shaw has struggled. Ryan Braun has struggled. The big one that everyone seems to circle is Jesus Aguilar. Aguilar was a part-time player at the beginning of the season last year, but he did not hit his first homer last year until April 21st, and then I believe he still had like two or three home runs by the middle of May. So again, fewer at-bats last year, but it's notable that it's not like he hit the ground running last year either. I guess I look at the lineup, and Jesus Aguilar is probably the biggest concern I have at this point. How do you feel? I guess if your ranking is, which guys should you be most concerned about to guys you shouldn't be worried about, how would you sort of organize it at this point?
Well, he hasn't hit a home run, and he's a home run hitter, so he needs to hit a home run. I suspect if he hits one, the pressure will come off, and he might start hitting them in bunches. But he needs to hit one to just remember how to do it. He hasn't really been coming close to hitting any. It's not like people have been robbing him up against the fence or anything. So he needs to figure out what he's doing wrong with his mechanics and stay back and start driving the ball again. He has not been doing that. And if it continues, you wonder if Eric Thames will just start getting more playing time at first base. He's hit some home runs, including a big one yesterday that tied the game. So to be determined. But Aguilar's in there for his slugging, and he's not slugging. So that you always put your job in jeopardy when you're not an established player, established of many years in the big leagues. You always put your job in jeopardy when you stop doing the thing that you're in there to do.
What about the other guys, though? Travis Shaw, I mean, Ryan Braun, we know is going to be battling injuries kind of probably for the rest of his career, and they sit him down to sort of manage his workload a little bit, but he's struggled. Travis Shaw, I think peripherally his numbers looked so good last year, thought maybe he would break out to even get to another level offensively. He has really been slow to get going. Do you have any concerns about those guys?
Well, Braun, got off to a great start and then went into a long skid, swung the bat a little bit better over the weekend, hit a big home run Saturday night. So, we'll see what happens with him. He kind of had tinkered with his swing over the offseason, and he's probably still trying to get the feel for that. Shaw, his hard hit rate, it does reflect better than the results he's got. So he's hit into some hard luck, but he also has not been hitting home runs. Last year, Aguilar and Shaw hit 67 home runs between them. 35 for Aguilar and 32 for Shaw. So when guys are coming off 30 home run seasons, and Shaw's had two of them. He's hit 30 home runs 2 years in a row for theirs. You expect them to have more than one home run combined as we get towards the end of April. So those guys need to get going. It'll make scoring runs a lot easier if the middle of the lineup starts producing. And also going to stop teams from walking Yelich. It's going to be very interesting in the three-game series that starts tonight in St. Louis to see how they pitch to him. He's just absolutely clobbered the Cardinals pitching. Now, all at Miller Park so far. It was six games at Miller Park. But you do wonder if the Cardinals, because he's beat them up so bad, have just said enough, and they're going to start walking him. And if they do, the guys behind them are going to have to come through like Braun did Saturday night, or they'll just continue to walk him. So that's going to be a very interesting thing to me in this upcoming series. I wrote my Sunday column in the Journal Sentinel about just the back and forth with Mike Schilt, the Cardinals' manager, who in those three games at Miller Park last week, just the back and forth every day with reporters and him about Yelich in particular. And it seemed like for a couple of days he just couldn't believe his own eyes and just figured there's no way that this can just keep happening. And then by the end of the series, he had decided, well, I do believe my own eyes, and we're going to have to think about giving what they call the Barry Bonds treatment, which means holding up four fingers and walking them.
Yelich, of course, continued to do some damage at home against the next opponent in town. He hit a couple homers on Saturday night, hit a homer on Friday night, homer on Thursday night. So it's not just the Cardinals, but I think if this were, it's amazing that we got this deep into the podcast without, Christian Yelich on any other circumstance would lead off the podcast. The thing is, there's just only so many more adjectives we can throw his way. He's broken the franchise record for home runs and RBIs in the month of March/April. He is going to finish way ahead of the old marks, as we still have a week left of the month. I guess the only, I don't even know what to ask about him, other than he's obviously not going to keep it up to this ridiculous degree. You wonder if he's just going to wear himself out like this. Just he's a post game subject after every game because he's doing something amazing. He's had two home runs taken away, including Sunday, by great catches in the outfield. He's just on such another level. I mean. Other than, do we think he could keep it up in even some fashion? I just wonder if there's ever been a Brewers run like this, if there's ever been a player who's been this hot for this prolonged period of time.
Well, since the All-Star break of last year, he's got numbers that are just eye-popping. They just jump off the page, especially with slugging and OPS. So let's see what he does this week on the road. This year, almost all the damage has been at home. All of his home runs have been at home. Most of his RBIs have been at home. his slugging is way, way, way better at home than on the road. But they played more home games too. You know, the only road games they played so far is a three-game series in Cincinnati and then the 1 week out in LA where they played the Angels and the Dodgers. He didn't do a whole lot on that trip. So let's see what he does now with three. This week it's going to be on the road all week, three in St. Louis, three in New York. Some really good pitching from both teams. Really good starting pitching from both teams. As good a starting staff as anybody has in the league. So let's see, number one, how they approach him, and then how he does on the road too, because it has been lopsided home and away so far.
Brewer's probably going to miss Jacob deGrom, the Mets ace starter who went on the injured list with some shoulder issue, or not shoulder issue, elbow issue. So Brewer's at least will get one less great starter on this road trip. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting, again, this schedule does not relent. This is a pretty tough week of baseball with the Cardinals and the Mets. We mentioned Mike Moustakas a little bit earlier, this injury, this fractured finger. Sounds like it's a pain tolerance issue, whether or not he'll be able to get back into games quickly. Let's say he can't and he goes on the injured list. You know that people are going to start talking about Keston Hira. I think it's probably too early to see Keston Hira, but in the event that Moustakas can't play, is it as simple as plugging in Hernan Perez in that spot until further notice, or do they start thinking about Keston Hira already?
Well, if Moustakas has to go on the injured list,
Right.
and we'll wait and see if he does, that fracture's on the tip of his fingers, kind of in a weird place. And I think it's going to have to do more with him gripping the bat. Although it is his right hand, so you have to make sure he can grip the ball and throw it too. If they do decide that he has to go on the injured list, I think you're way more likely to see like a Tyler Saladino or a Corey Spangenberg come up. And then those guys and Hernan Perez play at second, and then Shaw would just play at third all the time, as he has been mostly anyway. And so I think that's what you would see him do. They really liked Spangenberg and Saladino. They were the last players cut from camp. So that's how they would go. Keston Hira would, when he gets called up, he's going to be the second baseman, you know. And so Moustakas is not. He's not died. He's got a little fracture on his finger. So he's not going anywhere. He'll be back soon, if not immediately. And so the Keston Hira is not never going to come up and just be some kind of fill-in player. When they call him up, whatever month, a year, day that is, that's to be the second baseman.
Before I let you go, want to get your sort of status report on the Brewers bullpen. We've seen Josh Hader give up home runs now in consecutive outings that actually turned into losses. So, a rare moment in time where Josh Hader wasn't dominant on every pitch he threw. He still looks, for the most part, to be fine, I would say. But I don't know if there's something to be concerned about there. But more than that, just the bullpen in general seems to be kind of holding its own. You know, it's not superstars out there. It's Junior Guerra gutting through some innings and getting some big outs, and Matt Albers kind of holding it together a little bit. Jeremy Jeffress' velocity is not back to where we kind of expect it to be, but I'm guessing the Brewers hope that with more time and higher leverage situations, we start to see that creep back up a little bit. Where do you see this Brewers bullpen right now? Is it less of a concern than it was on opening day?
Well, I mean, you know, the guys outside, everybody was saying, oh, well, they don't have anybody to go with Josh Hader. And then it was Josh Hader who got beat twice over the weekend by the Dodgers. And I'm making bad pitches with two strike counts, too. So he is human. We see that. Sometimes he looks inhuman. Yeah, the bullpen's less of a concern right now, I would think, than the starting rotation. They're, you know, we've already talked about the rotation and how they've got two spots in flux right now. But they've got good work out of their bullpen from most everybody else in recent games. So, and now Jeffress is back. We'll see if he can work his way back into form and be at least close to what he was last year. And so, you know, bullpens are always moving around to, especially the last couple of guys seem to float up and down a lot. We've already seen Patricia come up and down a little bit, and so it usually takes a while for bullpen roles to hash out. But right now, you know, Hader's the guy that had the tough weekend, not the other guys. So, and I don't think they're worried about Josh Hader. You know, he just had a couple of bad pitches and paid for it. You know, the Dodgers are one of the few teams that when Josh Hader makes a bad pitch, they're going to make him pay for it with home runs. They're just a huge home run hitting team. That's how they score almost all their runs. And so we'll see how that goes. But but their bullpen overall, kind of settled down after scuffling right out of the chute.
Yeah, one last note there. Jacob Barnes looks really good. He looks as good as he's been. So the Brewers have held it together, the bullpen wise. If they can patch things together in the starting rotation, they should be back. And again, all these problems we've discussed, the Brewers are still 13-10. Having gone through some tough series, so that's a pretty promising situation. Tom, any last thoughts before I let you go?
Well, just one other thing about the bullpen. Alex Claudio has been used a lot, and so that's what they expected to do with him, and he's been effective for the most part too. But let's just see how his usage go. Right now, he's on pace to pitch a lot of games, and I don't know how long Donnie Hart is up for, but at least it gave him one more lefty in their bullpen. So, but that's one thing to keep an eye on too. He's pitched great, and when you pitch great, they keep calling your number. But that has to be within reason. So we'll see how that goes with him.
He is Tom Haudricourt. You can read everything he has to say about the 2019 Milwaukee Brewers at jsonline.com. You should also check out his book, Special Brew, a look back at the 2018 Brewers. You can order a copy at Amazon. I know Barnes & Noble has it as well. I know there were a couple at the team store over the weekend. I'm guessing those are gone now, but they will be available in readers' hands very soon. Tom, thanks for joining us. We'll chat with you again very soon.
Thanks, JR.
Thanks to Tom for joining us today. Let's move into my conversation with Aaron Wilkerson, Brewers pitcher, who again homered in his last outing on Wednesday against the St. Louis Cardinals at Miller Park. Very fun moment, 2-run homer that kind of got the Brewers back into the game a little bit. He is not a regular batter. He wasn't in the minors. He wasn't in college, so it's sort of a surprise. He's not the guy who was just a masher in college who then decided to give it up to just do pitching once he got to the minor leagues. This is a guy who hasn't been a regular hitter since high school. So a very funny situation that he was able to hit a 2-run homer coming against Michael Wacha of the St. Louis Cardinals. So again, talked to him about that, about his Tommy John surgery while he was in college and kind of having to sort of work his way back without having sort of a major league team overlooking him. It was, or a college overlooking him. It was kind of a weird in between moment for him, and just a little bit more about his backstory, playing in independent league baseball, rising through the minors, and sort of contrasting those two cultures, what that was like. So give a listen to this. Here's Aaron Wilkerson. My guest is Aaron Wilkerson, relief pitcher, or pitcher, I guess I shouldn't pencil you in. There's some starting openings here, so pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. I love to start when I talk to pitchers about their home runs. If they hit them, you now have a home run, first major league hit. You had to have been a hitter on some levels, right? Like, you can't just hit a home run in the big leagues and just close your eyes and swing. Like, you had to have done this before on some levels.
Honestly, the last time I hit in a game before pro ball was high school.
Okay.
I got one college at bat because we kind of ran out of guys. Before that, that was about it. I mean, I was a pretty decent hitter, but nothing too crazy. Had one homer in double A. A full count, but yeah. The first big league homer. That's
amazing. And your first big league hit. That's crazy.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it both in one swing.
Right, no, I'm sure not. So looking back at your college career, you had 54 consecutive scoreless innings at one point, Cumberland College. What was that experience like? That's even no matter the level, that's a pretty crazy number. What was that stretch like for you? I know you got hurt right after.
Yeah.
Or right before, I guess, I'm not sure. I think right after.
So it was actually pretty interesting to hear that. I'm not a big stat guy. I don't really look at stats. I know if I go out and do my job, that the stats will take care of themselves. But it was pretty interesting to know that, kind of later on in the season. But I was throwing the ball well, and I think that year my B-low was kind of down a little bit because I think my elbow was kind of in the process of going. So I think I kind of joke around that. All the teams I faced were looking for, 94, 95, and I was out there throwing 88, 90. So, they kind of helped out a little bit. But, just kind of taught me to command the baseball a little bit better, and worked out well for me.
And then part of your story is everyone knows you were, quote-unquote, stocking shelves for a couple of years. So you have the Tommy John surgery, and most, when that happens to a pro ball player, they're under the watch of the doctors and their team, medical staff, and you didn't have any of that, right? So how did you go about doing that? That had to be really difficult.
It wasn't as bad as it seems to be.
Sure.
I had Tommy John at the end of my senior year. I still had another semester left of school.
Right.
So I went ahead and had the surgery. you know, did my last semester of school and just rehabbed there.
Sure.
Probably didn't throw as much as I probably should have at the time, but
okay.
You know, I was a little more relaxed with it, and wasn't trying to push the envelope a little too fast or anything. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that kind of helped a little bit with the recovery process, and you know, once I started playing the catch again and like trying to like ramp it back up, you know, it took me a while.
Yeah.
It did. I felt like I had to learn to throw all over again, but you know, I had some good mentors in the way. Kind of helped me through, and you know, got me here.
Yeah. Were you legitimately stocking shelves? Were you legitimately?
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
For a couple of years, even, huh?
Yeah.
And so, this was in Waco, Texas.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was took a job at night. I'd unload trucks of frozen food, Jeez. Put them in the vault, and you know, and we'd get anywhere between 4 to 6, 7 pallets of food that
Crazy.
Would be put on the shelf that night. So
crazy. And so you do play independent ball after that. What is independent ball like? I know a lot of people, I think we kind of picture these like remote locations, nobody in the stands. What is it like pitching an indie ball?
You know, I took it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little more relaxed and, you know, but you get out of it what you put into it. You know, I feel like it's pretty cutthroat.
Yeah. Even know, there, even in indie
yeah.
ball. Okay.
You know, because, I mean, you're getting paid to play. It may
sure.
not be much, but, you know, at the same time, if you're not performing or doing anything you're supposed to be doing,
sure,
they won't hesitate to go out and find somebody else. So,
yeah.
You know, it was fun. I enjoyed it, you know, at the time, and I'm grateful I did it.
Yeah. In 2014, the Red Sox come after you. Were they at games? Were you aware of them watching you, or did that come out of nowhere?
I wasn't.
Wow. Okay.
I'd actually heard a little bit about the Mets, you know, kind of talking about me and everything,
sure.
but. You know, I showed up one day and then, like, hey, the Red Sox, you know, bunch of contractor flying
That's
out.
Incredible.
And I was like, wow. You know, and, you know, at the time, like, you know, the Red Sox were kind of a powerhouse team. And I'm sitting there going,
yeah.
wow, I have a chance to go out and, you know, play for one of the better teams
yeah.
you know, in the league. So, you know, it was kind of a culture shock when I got
sure,
there.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, I'd be curious about the culture between indie ball and the minors.
Yeah, yeah, and the adjustment period and everything. I mean, like, It was unbelievably different, but in a good way. You know, it was way more structured and way more responsibility on my part, you know, to take care of things I need to take care of.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, I'm grateful for it, you know, and I took it and ran with it, so.
Yeah. Your flight was delayed coming back to the big leagues, not for your debut, but for your second trip back up here. What was that experience like? Sounded like that might have almost got in the way of you even getting here.
Yeah, it was chaotic for sure.
Sure.
But it was the cancel of flight, you know, show up, I'm a wife and daughter with me.
Yeah.
You know, so we had to stop and get diapers, everything else, crazy stuff. And you know, it was definitely taught me a little bit too, because now I travel with my glove and cleats and carry on.
That's right, because you'd use other people's equipment.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, so
your luggage did arrive midway through the game.
It did, in the third or fourth inning. But you know, at that point, I just went in and changed my cleats.
Yeah,
and, you know, a little more comfortable that way. But you know, the weight of the gloves, you know, warming
yeah.
up and everything could kind of throw you off a little bit. So
sure. Had so much success in the minors, and then you get thrown into Colorado Springs after you get traded, which is a pitcher's like horror, house of horrors. What was that experience for you, sort of adjusting, getting through that?
You know, when I first got there, I was pretty skeptic about it. I was,
sure.
you know, I heard the stories about how terrible it was and everything. The first few days, I felt fine there. You know,
yeah.
it felt like all my pitches were moving the same. And,
sure, yeah.
You know, but once you start traveling back and forth, that's when you really kind of notice it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just kind of important to keep your mind right, and you know, stay on track with what you're doing and believe in your pitches, and
sure.
you know, kind of trust that you know what you're doing is right, regardless of the outcome.
Yeah.
You know, because there's pop-ups at third base to go out there. You know.
It's yeah,
just,
no doubt.
It's a crazy place to play, but
right.
you know, we play in Denver, so
no
I
doubt.
Think it, you know it. If I ever throw in Denver, I'd. You know, I have got a little knowledge about the altitude and how to throw there. So,
all right, last thought. Zach Duke, former Brewers pitcher. I went to Midland High School. I think same high school as you, right?
Yeah, Midway.
And he would have been a bunch of years ahead of you. But did you know
yeah.
anything about him growing up or anything like that?
I heard about him. You know, getting drafted and all
sure,
that. And
sure.
You know, growing up, little small town, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody knew who he was, and you know, when you get drafted out of there, everybody's like, "Oh, it makes a big deal about it." I was like, "Man, that's kind of cool." And you know, I was actually in the locker room. I think he threw yesterday. I was sitting there watching him throw, and I was like, "Man, you know, we went to the same high school, that's like crazy. So much in common." I don't think I ever spoke a word to him, but you know, it's you know, it's kind of neat, you know, to see people that have a common ground and a familiarity with each other.
All right, sir. Thank you so much.
Awesome. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for tuning in today to the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. For Tom Hodricourt, Aaron Wilkerson, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. Again, if you found us on Apple Podcasts, please give us a rating, a review, and you can also let me know what you think on Twitter. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. That's J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. And let us know what you think. Hopefully you enjoyed the podcast. Hopefully there will be better news on the road this week for the Milwaukee Brewers than they were at this 3-4 homestand. And we will chat all about it next week. Tune in then.